This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
Let's go! Roquan Smith just decapitated Aaron Jones. What's that bull doing?
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Touchdown! There's the record breaker for Jonathan Taylor.
H.M., have a game.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Keenan Allen, reception number 956.
Today's guests. Seahawks defensive end, Leonard Williams. Monday night preview. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Can confirm it. Hey, welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, live on Disney Plus, live on the ESPN app, live on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, live on Sirius XM Channel 80, not live whenever you want to listen to us. We still say hello to our podcast listeners. The latest episode of Overreaction Monday is now in your RSS feed for you to listen to, or if you want to check it out every single week, you can watch Overreaction Monday on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. That's all ready for you to take in, but there's a 3-hour show for you in which to participate as well. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Here to have a conversation with us, Leonard Williams of the surging wagon in Seattle. I mean, the Seahawks are a wagon right now.
Right.
He's going to join us top of hour number three as we pay our respects to the 12s. And it's quite a dynamic National Football Conference that has the game of the week still to go in week number 10, with the Eagles taking on the Packers on the ESPN family of networks this evening. We'll preview that for you as well. Good to see you over there, Chris Brockman. How are you, sir?
Rich, I am excellent.
DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts. Good to see you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well.
TJ Jefferson, I see the candle is lit. Good to see you, sir.
My team didn't lose yesterday, so I got to say I'm pretty happy.
Penn State did play the game of the weekend prior to anything else in the National Football League against Indiana. That was incredible. It broke Gus Johnson. We'll talk about that in this 3-hour show as well.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. 844-204-RICH again is the number to dial this. The way I'm starting this show is potentially dicey. I'm giving that to you as a warning label. Well, actually, it's the warning label for me because of what I'm about to say, because I'm married into a family of New Englanders. But I think I speak for a lot of the rest of the United States of America when teams from Boston and New England win. Mm-hmm. You hear from the fan base quite a bit. You can hear it. Sometimes if you're quiet, you could hear it all the way from New England. What is it? What did James Taylor once saying about from Stockbridge to Boston? You can hear it. You can hear it. Wherever you are, if you're quiet. For those scoring at home.
Yeah.
You hear about it. You hear about it. And certainly from fans of the New England Patriots. And that's the franchise that kicked basically your ass and the team that you root for's ass more often than not for 2 decades. And we all know the reason why, in part. It's because the guy is calling games on Fox right now. And when he stopped playing for the Patriots, things began to change. And you heard less and less and less. You heard complaints more than anything else, which, by the way, you also hear when they win, which is another reason why you don't want to hear from these folks. If you feel that way, I regret to inform you. The New England Patriots are not only back, but they are one of the best teams in the National Football League. And without question, through 10 weeks into this National Football League campaign, a highly viable Super Bowl winning team and a threat to do so in the 2025 National Football League campaign.
I know that hurt you to say that, so thank you, Rich.
It did not hurt me to say that. Yeah, as you know, I adore the Kraft family. As you know, I have emceed a handful of their kickoff dinners. Gladly.
You've been fighting it all year.
I've not been fighting it. I needed to see a few things in order to believe it. And if you don't believe it, they've got a quarterback who's not only better than most, but could be the best in the National Football League at the end of the day in year two, in Drake May. Not his best statistical game yesterday, Season low completion percentage, worst passer rating since the week one loss to the Raiders. But what he does, and by the way, also a brutal mistake by throwing an interception in the end zone.
That was rough.
To keep things a tighter game, a five-point game instead of at least an eight-point game, if not a two-score game for the Patriots in rainy Tampa, where the Patriots fell down early. But what he does is make big-time throws, whether they are deep throws, like the one to Mac Hollins late in this game, up five, to put them in position only for May to throw that aforementioned end zone interception. Or he will do what he did at the end of the first half, which is stuff that you're familiar with if you've watched the Patriots over the last quarter century. And odds are you have, because they've been on national television quite a bit for the last quarter century because of the aforementioned two decades of ass kicking.
two decades of ass kicking.
Not bad.
Not bad.
That's a tour. I think that's called a tour.
Is that Steely Dan?
Yeah, no, definitely not. No, definitely not Steely Dan. That's a little bit. That's a little bit more hard.
It's AC/DC.
Yeah, Matt Mike.
AC/DC.
There you go. Yeah, you went more hard.
Metallica.
Yeah,
right. Metallica.
Listen. A second-year quarterback going into Baker Mayfield's house with the Bucks coming off of their bye week and having timeouts and a coach who knows what to do with them and an offensive coordinator in McDaniels who knows how to dial things up for Mike Vrabel, who wisely got McDaniels to return to his role as OC of the NEP with no time left. And you got a coach who just rolls the dice because that's him and Mike Vrabel. You're going to go for it for a touchdown with no time left at the end of the second quarter. Instead of going for a 10-10 tie and running into the locker room and getting the ball to start the second half, you're going to go for the touchdown. And what did May do? He made everybody look like a genius because he made a beautiful throw to Stephon Diggs, who made a remarkable catch for a touchdown. And then they come out of the second half, get the ball first, and score a touchdown. Travion Henderson with a 55-yard touchdown run. 21-10. Stop me. Have you heard that story before? The Patriots scoring on each side of the half and flipping the script, going from down to up by two scores. Have you heard that? That's part of the two decades of ass kicking. And then they play defense as well. The Patriots have now, with the win over the Bucks, 28-23 is the final score. The Patriots have now scored. They've now won seven in a row. Once upon a time, 1-2. And then after they beat the Buffalo Bills to go above 500 in the second of the seven consecutive wins that they've come up with so far. And after they won in Western New York, let's see what they can do. And all they've done is win five more in a row. And in this seven-game streak, they have in each of the games scored 23 or more points or allowed 23 or fewer points. That's the longest such streak for the Patriots within a season in team history. And once upon a time, they didn't lose in a single regular season. Even the 07 Patriots never did what the 2025 Patriots are doing on both sides of the football. Of the previous eight teams in NFL history to have such a streak reach seven or more games within a season, five of those previous eight teams went on to win the Super Bowl. Or in the case of the 1961 Oilers, who did it nine straight times, they won the American Football League championship. So you're sitting here thinking, oh, you're all right, good enough, Rich. Patriots win the Super Bowl this year? I say this with all
you better sense. Hope not, or I am going to be see, obnoxious.
Well, I'm about to say, before you obnoxiously interrupted me,
God, if you
being
listen.
On brand, if you're sitting there thinking the Patriots can't win the Super Bowl this year, I've got four words. Why the hell not? Why the hell not?
Because we're good people, Rich, and we don't deserve that.
No.
Oh.
We don't deserve that.
Here's Mike Vrabel after the game, and he's not raising any banners. That's the beauty of what he does. Just keep stacking wins. Hit it.
Well, I think that this, anything in life, You're going to have to certainly put some chips in the pot to be able to win something. Can't sit around and wait and hope that they, you know, just hand it to you. And sometimes you can, but most of the time in life, you know, you got to be able to risk something to get something in return. So can't win nothing you don't put in the middle.
That's what he said when asked about going for it before the end of the first half. All or nothing, touchdown or nothing, leading by four or nothing. And, you know, you could sit here and go, oh, wow, that's really philosophical. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Ask the Giants fans who watch their head coach kick a field goal to go up 20-10 instead of 24-10 from the half-yard line in the Chicago snow and how that worked out for your team. And, you know, again, we've been talking about the Patriots for a bit, too, since the draft, when Daniel Jeremiah says the draft was New England's and they were killing it. And you, Chris, were so upset by the Joe Milton victory in the last week of the regular season against the Bills and how it cost you the chance to draft Travis Hunter, and all you got was a consolation prize in the left tackle maybe for the next decade plus to help protect Drake May and Will Campbell. The first touchdown pass, May became the first Patriots player ever. Okay. Oh, pardon me. My bad. He became the first Patriots player to complete multiple 50 or more yard passes in a single game since Brady did it to Brandon Cooks alone in the 2017 season in week 11. Because he completed that 54-yarder I mentioned to Mac Hollins, and then the touchdown to Kyle Williams, which went for 72 yards to give them their first score of the game. By the way, Brady won MVP in 2017 as well, and the Patriots made it to the Super Bowl and lost to the Eagles that year, in case you're wondering if there's anything in the ether between what I'm saying and the Patriots actually making the Super Bowl this year. As I mentioned to you, also, Trevion Henderson ran one in from 55 yards out. He ran one from 69 yards out also. So three offensive touchdowns of 50 or more yards scored by rookies for the Patriots in Week 10. Do you know the last team to do that? To have a rookies, mm-hmm. in this case, score three times in a game with 50 or more yards in each one. Last time it happened was when Randy Moss did it all himself against the Cowboys in Thanksgiving Day of 1998. That's the last time it happened in a game. And we saw what the Patriots did. So
I don't know why that was so funny. But
because it happened with one single guy in one single game.
I try to forget
the whole
game.
Country watching. Okay. Most of the country watched this on CBS, but... the Patriots are now 8-2, which nobody saw coming into the season, certainly when they were 1-2, or even when they were 3-2 after beating the Bills in Western New York, and the Bills lost in Miami yesterday. The Dolphins took care of them, and the Bills are now a game and a half behind the Patriots, who take on the Jets in just 3 days at home. And the Patriots after that... wind up going to Cincinnati. Then they have a Giants home game on a Monday night before they have a bye, after which they'll be nice and rested for the Bills to try and come in and avoid a season sweep. The Ravens, that's a big game before two division games end. The Patriots have a real good shot at going deep, just like May does very well. Just wanted to start the show to point that out. And of course, all Colts fans are sitting there after I just spent the first 10 minutes of this program giving the flowers to New England. The Colts rebounded very nicely in Germany. Colts rebounded from their disheartening bang thing loss in Pittsburgh last week by going all the way to Germany with Sauce Gardner now wearing his Colts number one and taking on a Falcons team who had him dead to rights until, for whatever reason, they decided to call timeout to help the Colts settle in their field goal unit to attempt to tie the game and force overtime just to try and maybe save some time left for them in regulation to win it with their own field goal, even though that hasn't really happened much to their help throughout the season when they could have called that timeout after the third down to conserve time, but instead let the time wind down only to stop it for the Colts, who of course forced overtime and then won it because Jonathan Taylor is unstoppable.
Man.
This is an MVP candidate, folks, of note. I understand. I just talked about Drake May. This guy had a better day than Drake May. Drake did what he needed to do to win on the road as a second-year player, as young as he is. You got to give it up to him, and he's going to be in the mix for MVP, and so is Matthew Stafford. But I don't want to hear running backs can't win it or shouldn't win it. This guy did exactly what the Colts needed after last week's tail-kicking in Pittsburgh, is to basically say, tip the cap to the Steelers' defense. They did what they needed to do. They turned us over quite a bit. They turned our quarterback over quite a bit. What we're going to do is we're going to rebound, and we're going to hand it to Jonathan Taylor, and he's going to take us home. As a matter of fact, I was in Germany for the last overtime game of the International Series. I called it. I called that game in Munich between the Giants and the Panthers. That game went into overtime. Panthers won it, and they've kind of turned things around since then, even though they took a brutal loss at home to the Saints on Sunday to sink them back to 500 and put their wild card hopes in a little bit more jeopardy than it was going into the week. But the reason why I bring it up is because the Giants lost that game. It wound up being Daniel Jones's last game as a Giant. Daniel had a terrific fourth quarter to force overtime. And the first play of overtime, Daniel Jones handed it to his running back, Tyrone Tracy, and the ball hit the ground. Tracy was inconsolable. The Panthers took that field position and won it. So I just have to say this. When Jones handed it off to Jonathan Taylor in this overtime, I did not have a sense of foreboding. As a matter of fact, I don't think a single soul in Europe, the United States, or around the world had a single sense of, oh, deja vu all over again. Daniel Jones in Germany in overtime because he helped force it after being down. Oh, okay. Maybe you should let Daniel Jones win it. Nah. As a matter of fact, too, I'm sitting there watching the game with Coop, and Cooper says to me, Dad, why aren't they just kicking the field goal? And I thought, you know what? Why aren't they just kicking the field goal? Why are they keeping handing it off to Jonathan Taylor? And I thought, and I said to Cooper, I'm like, because it's probably a better odds of winning this game by handing it to Jonathan Taylor than it is to bring out your kicker and attempt a layup of a field goal.
That's what the fans wanted, though.
I understand.
They wanted that kicker to come out.
I'm just saying that's how money this guy is. 32 carries, 244 rush yards, 3 rushing touchdowns, 3 catches for 42 yards. We always do the math for you here. 286 scrimmage yards. That's a career best. And it is 19 yards better than the previous best game in the history of the Colts from scrimmage. A guy named Marshall Faulk did it with 267 yards in week 13, 1998. He's got now the second most rush yards in a game in Indianapolis history. Do you know who he trails? Himself, who had 253 rushing yards in the final week of 2020. Sandwiched in between these two rushing performances is now Hall of Famer Marshall Faulk. Somebody now has 5 career games with 200 or more scrimmage yards and 2 rushing touchdowns. His name is Jonathan Taylor. That's behind only Derrick Henry, 2 behind him, 4 behind LaDainian Tomlinson. Taylor's 5 ties him with 2 guys named Jim Brown and Eric Dickerson. All right, so let's go now a little bit better. 200 or more scrimmage yards in a career game in which you ran it in 3 times, including the walk-off one, okay, in overtime. Jonathan Taylor now has 3 of those career games with 200 or more scrimmage yards and 3 or more rushing touchdowns. Tied with Derrick Henry, 1 behind LaDainian Tomlinson. And his 3 rushing touchdowns vaulted him over Edgerrin James for most career rushing touchdowns in Colts history. He now leads the NFL with 17 scrimmage yards, most through the first 10 games of a season in Colts history. It helps to have Tyler Warren also lead the league in tight ends as a rookie, and the defense being opportunistic and also having sauce. So the Colts, nice rebound. Nice rebound, everybody. And it has, again, to do with Daniel Jones playing well, has to do with the defense doing its thing, The Falcons, once again, did a little bit of help to their opponent, even though they had a terrific game. At some point, though, and I speak for all fantasy folks who have Bijan Robinson, he's going to be make for a great featured back for the Falcons one day. I know that's an unfair assessment to the way that he's used.
Can he get the ball in the red zone? Why is that against the law?
I know that's a total fantasy thing. I understand it.
Did that not pass through customs or something?
But well done, Colts. Well done, Colts. Nice rebound. They're 8-2. And Denver, as we all know, started the week 8-2. They just need the Broncos. What they need to do is start playing faster and not put things in the hands of their defense to keep the game going until the offense comes around in the fourth quarter, when sometimes it doesn't, and they still pull out the win. Remarkably, that week two contest between the Colts and the Broncos, in which the Broncos thought they had won it until a leverage penalty got called against them. We're going to keep mentioning this because as long as the Broncos and the Colts keep winning, they're 8-2. That's the difference between the Broncos being in first place in the conference and not. And then you've got the Patriots raising their hands saying we're 8-2 as well. How about that? In the AFC through the first 10 weeks of this season. As we all know, the final game of week 10 is an NFC contest, and we'll talk about the NFC in a second. But much was made of last week's Bills-Chiefs game, and as I mentioned to everybody, it was a different types of Bills-Chiefs game because it's the first time that Allen faced Mahomes where neither were in first place, and the loser was at more of a crossroads than the winner, who needed to keep winning and use that as a springboard to have a chance to still be the one seed in this highly competitive conference that the Bills and the Chiefs no longer have, along with the Ravens. Apparently an annual right to being called the best team in the conference. Well, Ravens are under 500. Chiefs are at 5-4. And I know the Ravens are playing better. And the Bills just lost to the Dolphins. You got 3-8-2 teams sitting there thinking, we can win this damn thing. And not just this damn thing being the AFC, but the whole shooting match. It's a different world right now. Let's take a break. We come back. We hit the NFC. Lions have a new play caller. How about that? Dan Campbell taking a thigh out of the play call sheet.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
Let's talk about O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. They offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts, accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts, too, can test your battery for free in or out of your car. And if it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. That's how helpful they are. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you'll find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more.
Rich Eisen here for Sonos, the speakers that bring every game to life in my own house. With studio quality sound, Sonos makes you feel like you're right there in the stadium. Whether you're cheering on your team, binging your favorite show, or listening to the hottest songs, Sonos fills every room with incredible sound. Setup is easy. Just plug in, open the Sonos app, and you're ready to go. Want stadium quality sound at home just like me? Because I love Sonos. You will too. Explore soundbars, speakers, and more at Sonos.com. Sonos, they look as good as they sound.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Whether you're watching us on Disney Plus, the ESPN app, or listening to us on ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. When play callers change in the National Football League, you hear about it. It gets announced. It gets leaked. It gets talked about. It gets broken up and broken down and all that stuff. And then you're wondering about a rift on the coaching staff or what's going on. There's a coach on the hot seat because they have now made a change. I mean, Kevin Stefanski no longer calling the plays, and Cleveland's a perfect example. We heard about it coming in. Tommy Rees is the new guy. Is it because Stefanski's feeling the pressure, despite him being a two-time coach of the year, blah, 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 blah. And then lo and behold, who comes and starts calling the plays for the Detroit Lions yesterday but Dan Campbell?
Yes.
I didn't even, again, I wasn't familiar with your game.
But Dan Campbell.
I didn't know you could do that.
And, you know, so much made out of, you know, Johnny Morton taking over for Ben Johnson. And then they kicked Ben Johnson's behind in week two and put up 50 points. And everyone's talking about how it's a new world. And I was talking about how Dan Campbell, if it all works out for him, that's coach of the year material, because the Eagles once changed coordinators and fell off the cliff, and the Lions had won. You know, went 0-1 and then won four in a row. Then last week, the Detroit Lions coming off a bye, and they got beat by Minnesota. And did anybody know that Dan Campbell was going to take the play calling? That Dan Campbell was going to be the new play caller? And then you take a look at his sheet. And I saw this and I thought to myself, is it this large because, you know, because he also was wearing his glasses at some point, too.
Sure, sure.
And like, does he need the font bigger like all of us totally. Do as we advance in age? Or is it required in the National Football League that you need a play sheet in proportion to your size, your own size? Because if it was a regular play sheet, it would look like a postage stamp in this man's man hands.
Right. So Mike McDaniel has the smallest play sheet in the league.
I don't know. It's just like, if you're Dan Campbell's size, you need a play sheet a similar size. And all they did in Detroit was put it on the Washington Commanders and lay it on thick on the Washington Commanders and come up with their 44-22 win with a season high in total yards 546, rush yards 226, first downs 30. I mean, he took over the play calling and nobody really even knew about it. And this is what he had to say as to why after the game.
You know, it was just, let's try something a little different, right? You know, look, I know what I want to do. I know how I want to do it. Now, that being said, this is a collaborative effort now. I mean, I was taking input from John Morton that whole time and the other coaches. But I just wanted to change it up a little bit. You know, let's just see if maybe a different play caller can maybe get us a little rhythm. That's all. And it honestly is nothing more than that.
Yeah, and it makes sense for him to basically say, move on. There's nothing to see here. Now, you could also say it helps to have taken on a Washington Commanders team that's falling apart, that came into the game with three straight losses of 21 or more points being the difference maker, and they now have now lost four such games in a row, which is the longest such losing streak since the 2002 Cardinals lost four straight games within a single season of 21 or more points. And you can't argue with the results either. Number zero in your program. Holy crap. Jahmyr Gibbs had another massive game, but this one in particular. 15 carries, 142 rush yards, two rushing touchdowns, and a receiving touchdown in his three catches for 30 yards. Second career game with 150 or more scrimmage yards and three or more touchdowns. Jonathan Taylor is the only player with multiple such games in the last two seasons. And then in terms of why you want to keep going with what had been previously laid out in Dan Campbell's vision, as he was just alluding to there. Guys, most touchdowns prior to turning 24. We have a list for you now. Jahmyr Gibbs has 41 touchdowns. In terms of prior to age 24, this is fifth most all time. He's one behind Jim Brown, two behind Emmett, three behind Randy Moss, and six behind Barry Sanders. And he's less than 24 the rest of this year. He doesn't turn 24 till next March 20th. There'll be a new league year before there's a new actual age year for Jahmyr Gibbs.
Feels like he might get to 50.
Dude, the way he's scoring right now, and certainly with the way, wait for it, Dan Campbell is dialing up the plays. And this is why it takes, listen, this just in, there's no question about Church Bells and Dan Campbell, right? This has been established. But what a risk. What a risk. Oh, yeah, we're just going to change the play callers in the middle of the campaign at 5-3, okay? We're going to change the play calling, and what if it didn't work out? What now? Now you go back to the other play caller? I just wanted to try it. Didn't work out. Let's go back to the other guy, and it'll be like, oh, okay. So choice B is now choice A again because you thought you were choice A, and you wound up being choice C?
Wow.
I mean, that is significant. And I'll say this, man. If the Lions continue to do what I think they're going to do, because I chose them to win the NFC going into the season, and I know the coach of the year is usually chosen out of the surprise candidates, like, say, Shane Steichen for the 8-2 Colts or Vrabel for the 8-2 Patriots, to make a move like this and say, I'm taking over the play calling, and by the way, I'm going to keep it quiet, and then I'm not only keep it quiet coming in, I'm going to tamp it down leaving it. And their next game is against the Eagles and Vic Fangio. It's going to be DC versus VF in a massive Sunday night game in week 11. Massive. So Campbell's going to be the play caller and the dice roller and the leader. That's a hell of a lot. He's now doing what Sean Payton's doing. Name me another. Andy Reid. He's next. Like, I'm doing it.
Kyle Shanahan.
Name it. That's what Dan, instead, everyone thinks Dan Campbell's just being there as the leader, emotional leader, and you follow me to run through a brick wall, and then I'll just make some sort of crazy-ass move on fourth down and roll the dice, and it'll work out. He's now calling the plays. What a move. Out of nowhere. Wow. And that is big. Because the NFC is as deep end of a pool as you can possibly get. I understand we're talking about this in advance of tonight's big Eagles-Packers game. 6-2 versus 5-2-1. We know last year they played each other in Brazil to week one, and then they played each other in, what, week 19, right? One and done the Eagles, one and done the Packers, and this is big. But you also have the NFC West, which is a wagon. They have two wagons right now. And you could say the Niners are going to get Brock Purdy back in there and might actually be better at some point offensively with Ayuk coming in, hopefully for them. Pearsall comes back. They'll be fully constituted. Christian McCaffrey's going to run the ball, catch it. Defensively, they are obviously a shadow of their week one selves without Bosa and Warner. But the Rams went in and just hit them in the mouth repeatedly. They did whatever the hell they wanted going up 21-0. And invariably, the Niners aren't going to just wilt in Santa Clara. You know, but you knew at some point it wasn't going to be a blowout like what Seattle was doing at the time to Arizona. At one point in the middle of the second quarter of those games, it was a combined score of 36-0, Seattle and the Rams over the Cardinals and the Niners. And these two teams face each other in Week 11. Talk about another massive Week 11 game in the NFC that's in the ether right now. But Matthew Stafford is entering the MVP chat. I saw him set an international series record with 5 touchdown passes in London on the Jacksonville Jaguars when the Rams went into London and went full Bill O'Brien on them. When they strolled into London and basically said to the Jaguars, you know, what's up?
What's up, Trevor?
And then off the bye, he throws for 4 touchdowns against the Saints. And then Stafford throws 4 touchdowns against the Niners. We do the math for you again. That's 13 touchdowns in a 3-game span. And that's pretty damn good. Only Roethlisberger and Tom Brady have had a 14 passing touchdown and no interception streak in a 3-game span since the Super Bowl started to be played in the Super Bowl era. That excludes overlapping spans. What that means is, you know, it goes from one season to another. Stafford is just one of 5 players to have 13 or more passing touchdowns and no interceptions over a 3-game span since 1970. If you want to just basically say, how about 3 games in a row? Okay? With 4 passing touchdowns. How about that? Let's put that subset in there. Dan Marino is the only one to do it 4 times in a row in 94 and 84. And Peyton Manning did it 5 times in a row in 2004. Russell Wilson did it 3 times in a row in 2020. Mahomes in 2018. Drew Brees in 2011 did it 3 straight times. Stafford, though, is the only one to do it without a single interception in that streak. And he also reached the 400 career passing touchdown mark, becoming the 9th player to do it. And I said on Overreaction Monday, and I said here, and I'll repeat it again, this season was going to be the season that Stafford was showing everybody he is a Hall of Famer and taking any doubters that still remain in that world and removing that doubt. He is playing like an MVP at this advanced age, and this is a guy who's supposed to not be able to get out of bed in August. To start in September, let alone get out of bed in September, so he could start?
Spinal.
Unbelievable. And he's even like doing touchdown celebration shimmies and whatever.
What? Yeah, I mean, I was having a good time. I got hit on that one pretty good, so I had to shake that one off a little bit. But no, it was, I don't know, man. I have fun out there. I lose my mind when we score touchdowns. I don't think about it. A lot of these guys are in the locker room pregame prepping what kind of dance they're going to do if they score a touchdown. I just go out there and play, and whatever comes to me, comes to me.
Yeah.
What was in that Airstream over the summer? Because we need one of those parked outside.
We certainly do. Well, it helps to have Kyren Williams with 2 rush touchdowns, Davante Adams and Puka Nacua being your wide receivers, and a bunch of tight ends that are available on your waiver wire in case you want to roll the dice that it's one of their times for
right.
Stafford to find them in the end zone. Defensively, Verse, Young, Fisk, Landman, who punched one out, Lake, just to name 5. I mean, Rams, you can make the case they're the best team in football. And you can make the case the Seattle Seahawks are the best team in football as well. Man, oh man, I know we've got Leonard Williams coming up in hour number 3 of this program, but DeMarcus Lawrence made his presence known. He basically, I guess, let me see the final score here. Let me get this right. His 2 touchdowns would have made it a 1-score game for the Cardinals. His final score was 44-22. I mean, how many second halves can Sam Darnold just smoke him if he got him? That's 2 in a row now, right?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't miss a pass in week 1 against the Commanders. And then in the second quarter, it's like, do what you want, man. You want to do Wordle? Go ahead and do Wordle.
do Wordle.
You know? Just do Wordle. Did you already hit Jackson Smith and Jigba for a touchdown? That's what, okay, check that box.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Jackson Smith and Jigba, 1,041 receiving yards in the first 9 games. That's 1 better than Julio Jones for 6th all-time. Smith and Jigba is now 5th. He missed Justin Jefferson's 2022 mark of 1,061 by just 19 yards. Joins Irv and Antonio Brown as the only players with 75 or more receiving yards in each of their first 9 games of a season. The running attack is great. I mean, it's kind of crazy. The Seattle Seahawks, they have one of the most prolific quarterbacks in the game right now. They have arguably the most prolific wide receiver in the game right now, and they have the most scorers in the league who are not on your fantasy team. And you've never heard of, and you're like, wait a minute, who's that person? He plays in the National Football League?
That's what I said last week.
It's pretty much. And then DeMarcus Lawrence became the first player ever with multiple defensive fumble returns for a touchdown of 20 yards or more in a single game. And he did it in the first half. It was over. This thing was done and finished. So the Seahawks are showing they can do at home, remarkably, what they do on the road, which is win and not lose. And next week, it's Seattle and Cooper Kupp, who had a nice game in returning back in Los Angeles. Both teams 7-2. Oh, baby. And you got the defending Super Bowl champs going against the Packers, who are atop their division tonight. You got the Bears with 6 wins. They come back on the Giants. You've got the Bucks with 6 wins, even though they lost to New England. This NFC is wide open. Wide open. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Let's talk when we return about the AFC North and what is going on there. It is playing out like the rest of everybody thought it might play out. That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show on a busy Monday.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. We're proud to serve over 2 million veterans and their families because your service inspires ours. And your service opens the door to membership, which means you can get access to exclusive rates, discounts, and financial tools that you can share with your whole family. Become a member at NavyFederal.org/veterans. And from all of us, happy Veterans Day. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA.
As you know, managing maintenance, repair, and operations is never easy. But for the ones who always rise to the challenge, Grainger has your back. From professional-grade products you can count on to fast, dependable delivery, they're there to help you keep things running smoothly. Plus, their technical product specialists are here to help answer your toughest questions. And because Grainger knows safety is always a priority, they're committed to being your partner in protecting both your people and your facilities. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, we're on Disney Plus, the ESPN app, and ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Take the next step forward in your career with great benefits and an award-winning workplace. Apply at careers.progressive.com. Okay. We were going to talk about the AFC North, which we'll do in hour number two now, that there is breaking news. Hit it.
Here it comes. Boom! And Ray, I see.
Breaking news.
Christopher, what do you have over there?
Yeah, and a kind of an unsurprising move, I guess, if you watched the way the last few weeks have finished. The Giants have fired head coach Brian Daboll. According to multiple sources, Adam Schefter, Mike Garofalo, and others, Mike Kafka, the OC, is going to be the interim coach.
Okay, listen, this is unbelievable. This basically sums up what it's like to potentially be a head coach in the National Football League. You get your first shot because you have, amongst other things, come up through the, I guess, Saban/Belichick tree. I'm sure Belichick was talking about Daboll to the Mara and Tisch family saying, hire this guy. And you also saw what he did to Josh Allen, and you hire the Bills general manager. Let's bring it together and let's go. And all he does with Daniel Jones is make the playoffs and win coach of the year that year. And Daniel Jones and the Giants with Saquon go into Minnesota and boat race the Vikings and then get boat raced by the Eagles. And we all know the decisions that were made in the front office and then the inability to win games with none other than Daniel Jones. And yada, 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 a 6-11 season in his second year there, a 3-14 season in his third year there, a drafting of a kid named Jackson Dart, who he goes to in early stages at 0-3, and the kid has been nothing but electric when he's not concussed or getting hit. And they're 2-8. And Brian Daboll, after going 9-7-1 in his first year to win Coach of the Year, is fired in the middle of his fourth season with a 20-40-1 overall record as the head coach of the Giants. And then this year with Dart, after beating the Chargers. This is unbelievable. You know how when you look, certainly, and you're on the ESPN app, and you're following with the dots and the you know the dotted line parabolas, and you're following a game with you know on your phone.
Yeah.
There's always that percentage at the top of the screen about but percentage of winning against the Cowboys, Broncos, and Bears in the fourth quarter. The Giants, at the zenith of their leads in those games, had percentages to win of 92.3% against the Cowboys, against the Broncos, 99.3%, and then against the Bears yesterday, 96.9% chance of winning late in the fourth quarter. The Giants lost all of them. Oof. According to this mathematic expert, the odds of that happening is 1 in 60,000. Oh, the Giants didn't want to do this, people. I know it. I saw it with them. They love this guy. They didn't want to fire him. John Mara did everything he could to try and hold on to give Dable every chance. And Dart has been, again, like I said, it electric. And clearly part of that has to do with Dable getting him ready and coaching him up and all of that business. Of course, obviously, it's his own personal abilities as well. But he's also learning in the National Football League. You're born into a situation. Sometimes a guy who's your coach, he's there for just a hot minute. And now who wants to coach Jackson Dart in the New York City metropolitan area in the NFC East? I imagine they'll be lining up. This is absolutely going to be one of the best jobs that's available, especially since ownership doesn't want to fire you. But with the Giants fan base watching this defense also have a negative 47 point differential in the fourth quarter, second only to the Cardinals, who, as we all know, lost a ton of games in the first half of the season in the fourth quarter, and he wouldn't make a move on the defensive side of the ball. Now the Giants have made a move on Dable. And it's Mike Kafka who's going to have to figure out how to protect Dart and win some football games for the Giants, who are back in the coaching search. Hour number two on our radio side is coming up.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.